You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The Ideas Network is bringing you a documentary series about a little-known process with massive consequences. It's called WPR Reports Mapped Out, and it is a deep dive into redistricting and what it has meant for Wisconsin. In today's bonus episode, WPR's Bridget Bowden and Sean Johnson, they take us through what happened in the first part of this year's redistricting cycle and what it could mean for the state going forward.
There are times in modern politics when, and this is an understatement, it really sounds like Democrats and Republicans are talking about completely different things.
Like, they could be debating a bill, and it sounds like they're not even talking to each other. It's as if they're on totally different planets.
Take the public hearing on the legislature's proposed redistricting plan this year. Remember, these are the maps that will shape Wisconsin's political boundaries for the next decade.
Good morning to all the members and to the chairman.
Robin Voss, the powerful Republican Assembly Speaker, is testifying in favor of maps his party has drawn. The maps at this point are bills, and he's the lead author.
To be clear, it is the duty of the state legislature, as laid out in our state constitution, to, quote, apportion and district anew the members of the Senate and Assembly.
Voss is bragging about the new maps. He says they meet all the legal requirements of redistricting and should be passed.
But when Democrats get a chance to ask questions of Voss, a pattern emerges. They want to talk about the old maps, the ones Republicans passed in 2011.
And if you've listened to this podcast, some of it might sound familiar. Jeff Smith, a Democratic senator, alludes to the non-disclosure agreements Republicans had to sign to look at their districts that year.
Since you signed our non-disclosure agreements in 2011, is that done, or can you talk about 2011 now, or?
You know, it's interesting that you would choose that vein of questioning, because what we have before us, I was not speaker. I was not in charge of redistricting.
You were in the legislature, and you signed one of those non-disclosures.
Yeah, I was in the legislature.
And Kelder Royes, a Democratic senator from Madison, wants to talk about the last maps, too.
We can agree that that happened. It was widely reported at the time. I just want to make sure that the record is clear that that did happen and that members in this room did sign those secrecy oaths. Now,
well, first of all, let me just correct that, okay? You are using terms meant to incite an opinion, right? A secrecy oath, right?
More than an hour into the hearing, it's clear that Voss has had it. He doesn't want to talk about the old maps anymore.
It is because you want to talk about the past, I want to talk about the future.
On the surface, this sounds like one of those political moments where both sides are talking past each other.
But this time, they're actually talking about the same thing. Because the new maps, the ones Voss is proposing, are based on the old maps.
We know that the map drawn in 2011 was a good one for Republicans. So this is going to be a critical question over the next few months. Can this map that helped cement GOP power for the past decade be reused for the next 10 years?
From WPR Reports, I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Bridget Bowden. This is Mapped Out.
The story of redistricting in Wisconsin is full of intrigue and drama. It's a political thriller with twists and turns along the way.
But there are some things that we always knew were going to happen this year. We knew Republican lawmakers would pass maps, and they did.
There are 60 ayes, 38 nays. Senate Bill 621 is concurred in, gentlemen from the...
We knew Democratic Governor Tony Evers would veto those maps. And he did.
These gerrymandered maps will not become law.
So that's where we are. But it's not about the destination, it's the journey.
So even though this part of the story was the most predictable, it's noteworthy. And it's important because it's setting up the legal fight that will actually decide what Wisconsin's new political maps will look like.
Let's start from the beginning. As you know, redistricting starts with the census. This year, the results were delayed because of the pandemic.
So redistricting didn't really get started until August. That's when the first lawsuits were filed.
And in September, the legislature took its first votes on redistricting. Sort of. GOP lawmakers introduced a joint resolution that spelled out their priorities for drawing maps.
A joint resolution. This is not a bill. It's non-binding. It's the legislature saying, here's what we think.
There wasn't much debate on this resolution when it came up for a vote, and the only Republican to speak was Assembly Speaker Voss, who said it was the legislature's duty to handle redistricting, not the governor or the courts.
So hopefully, you won't just continue to take the no way, no how, never route, which is kind of where you've been before, and accept the fact that this resolution lays out the principles that we are going to utilize to ensure that we have a map that will last during the next 10 years, just like the last one has during the past decade.
But it's just a resolution. It doesn't actually require anything. It doesn't go to the governor's desk. It's not law.
At the end of the day, it's the legislature saying, we, the legislative branch, get to do redistricting. And here are the principles we value, because we said so. We're the legislature.
Among those principles, one person, one vote. Comply with the Voting Rights Act. These are required by the U.S. Constitution and federal law.
Also on the list, draw districts that are compact and contiguous and avoid splitting up local boundaries. These are required under the Wisconsin Constitution.
But this Republican resolution also included redistricting criteria that are not required, like avoiding putting two incumbents in the same district.
And this one is key, retaining as much as possible of the core of existing districts.
In other words, keep as much as possible of the map Republicans drew a decade ago. So, as you might imagine, Democrats like Mark Spreitzer were not happy.
This latest resolution is just more of the same, trying to cling to power and saying anything you can in order to come up with a justification for doing that.
This resolution passed, and when the Republican maps came out in October, they were pretty true to the principles it laid out.
And because of that, the 2021 map looked a lot like the 2011 map. When you retain as much as possible of existing districts, like the resolution said, you end up not making a lot of changes.
In the world of redistricting shorthand, this is often referred to as core retention. But University of Wisconsin-Madison law professor Rob Yablon has a different name for it, gerrylaundering.
Gerrylaundering is an attempt to perpetuate an existing biased map by carrying forward the existing lines with as little change as you can get away with.
The idea of core retention, where you preserve an existing map, is definitely not new in redistricting, but by no means is it a widely accepted norm.
Yablon found that of all 50 states, only three have laws or constitutional provisions that endorse core retention. Wisconsin is not among them. And in 2011, core retention was not a priority for Republican map drawers.
Yablon says another red flag is the way Republicans want to avoid incumbent pairing.
But what does that mean? Okay, think of it this way. The legislature's full of Republicans. Pairing them means changing the lines so that more than one incumbent ends up living in the same district. That means they'd have to run against one another, and only one of them could stay.
When a map avoids incumbent pairing, it avoids those fights. The incumbents get to stay. In other words, it means fewer of them are at risk of losing their jobs. On the whole, more GOP lawmakers are protected.
Again, this is not unheard of in the world of redistricting, but it's not a hard and fast rule. Republicans didn't follow it 10 years ago. In Wisconsin, it's not required by state law or the Constitution. And Yablon's research found several states actually ban mapmakers from favoring incumbents.
Which is why Yablon, who testified against Wisconsin's Republican-drawn maps, says Republicans are gerrylaundering.
It's clear that the goal for the Republicans and the legislature is to carry forward as much of the existing gerrymander as they can.
Now, you won't hear Republicans use words like gerrymander or gerrylaunder to describe their map, but they've definitely talked about carrying forward the existing map, which they say is a good one.
But as you might remember, Democrats, including Governor Tony Evers, have decidedly different views on those 2011 Republican maps. And Evers promised an alternative this year, drawn by his People's Maps Commission.
And the People's Maps proposal, while it was hotly debated on the floor, didn't go anywhere. Even some Democrats voted against it.
So what did pass? The Republican plan.
What that meant, after the break.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to WPR Reports Mapped Out with Bridget Bowden and Sean Johnson.
So Democrats call the GOP redistricting plan gerrylandering. Republicans have another way to describe it.
They call it a least changes map. In other words, adjusting the 2011 map for population changes and not much else.
There are practical reasons Republicans would want to do this. Obviously, the last map was really good for them. They like it. And it mostly survived multiple lawsuits. So if you think the new map is going to court, the old map? Not a bad place to start.
But if you take a close look at the map, the new Republican map, there are some places where the changes are significant. John Johnson is a research fellow at Marquette University. He studies redistricting trends and data.
It's very clear that they don't change the districts that they like, and they do change the districts where they think that they can either pick off a Democrat or shore up a Republican who needs help.
In other words, this map that Republicans call least changes does make strategic changes that benefit their party.
A good example of this is in Milwaukee's suburbs, where there are communities that have been changing over the past decade. The only seats Democrats flipped under the old map are in these suburbs. It's really the only part of the map where Republicans are threatened.
If you look at those districts, the competitive suburban districts, you get a pretty good snapshot of the decisions Republicans made in their new map.
We'll get really specific with one example here to give you a better idea. In Wisconsin, three assembly districts are nested inside every Senate district. So let's focus on one state Senate district and its three assembly districts.
So the Senate district first. It's held by Republican Dale Coinga of Brookfield. He won his last election by just 2.5 percentage points. And according to Johnson's research, the district actually has a slight Democratic lean.
So what do the assembly districts look like? Well, they include two of the only seats Democrats were ever able to flip in the last decade, currently held by Sarah Rodriguez of Brookfield and Robin Vining of Wauwatosa. And the third assembly district is held by Republican Joe Sanfilippo of New Berlin.
In the new map, Republicans make trade-offs. Vining's assembly district gets a lot more Democratic. It all but guarantees Republicans will never win there.
But at the same time, the other two assembly districts get a lot more Republican. Rodriguez's district goes from super competitive to safe Republican. And Sanfilippo's seat gets extremely red.
In essence, Republicans made a two-for-one deal with these assembly seats. But the real prize for them is in the Senate, where Dale Coinga's seat would also get safer.
Which is why Marquette's John Johnson says it's wrong to call the latest Republican map least changes.
I mean, who cares about a least changes map? Like, no one actually believes that that matters. I've never met anyone who sincerely believes that that's, like, a legitimate goal for a map. no one cares about that. So I struggle to even respond to that because I think it's such a disingenuous point.
When you look at all the changes on this map, based on Johnson's analysis, Republicans would be expected to win 63 seats in the assembly, up from the 61 they have now. And in the Senate, Republicans would be expected to win 23 seats, up from 21.
That would leave Republicans just a few seats away from winning a supermajority. So if Republicans had a good year, they could win enough seats in the legislature to override a governor's veto. GOP lawmakers could run things in Wisconsin, even more than they do now.
But like everything connected to redistricting, especially this year, what's okay and what's not is really up to the courts. And a least changes map is at the heart of the redistricting case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
The case was brought by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL, a conservative law firm that files high-profile lawsuits with the state Supreme Court on a regular basis.
The argument in WILL's redistricting lawsuit goes like this. It's the legislature's job to redistrict. But when there's split government, like there is this year, that's probably not going to happen.
And so, without a new map signed into law, Will argues the next best alternative is the old map, because it passed the legislature, was signed by a governor, and already survived lawsuits.
Democrats, as you might imagine, don't care for this argument. A bunch of Democrats filed briefs, including Bill Whitford and other plaintiffs from Wisconsin's famous redistricting case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. They accused conservatives of asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to do their dirty work.
They had a couple reasons. For one, they don't accept that least changes or core retention is a valid legal principle for redistricting. Beyond that, they say it's not fair because it could entrench the 2011 GOP gerrymander for another decade.
While the legal battle over redistricting isn't over, on November 30th, the Wisconsin Supreme Court did answer this major question. Is a least changes map okay? And their 4-3 majority opinion said, unequivocally, yes.
Writing for the majority, conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley more or less adopted Will's argument. Maps are political decisions, she said, and those are for the legislature to make, not the court.
The court also said it would not look at the partisan makeup of districts. That meant justices would not try to draw a map that's more balanced. Bradley said that would be decidedly non-judicial.
And the court kept going. Conservative justices said they would not decide any partisan gerrymandering cases, like the original Whitford case, the one brought by the Watts Tea Room Group. Remember, the U.S. Supreme Court closed the door to these cases in federal court. Now the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that partisan gerrymandering cases aren't allowed in state court either.
And Justice Brian Hagedorn, the court's swing vote, who everyone was watching, he mostly joined the majority opinion. Hagedorn said legislatures are allowed to draw partisan maps, and it's not the court's place to make political judgments.
The case isn't over. The court still gets a chance to approve specific maps eventually, and a federal court could still weigh in. But this ruling was, without a doubt, a huge win for Republicans, because the map they got to draw after they won big in the 2010 election, that helped them cement their majorities for a decade, could live on until at least 2032.
2032. Between now and then, lawmakers will come and go. The political pendulum will swing. But maybe not in the legislature.
Mapped Out is reported by Bridget Bowden
and Sean Johnson. We're produced by Brad Kohlberg, edited by Noah Ovshinsky. Music by Carl Christensen. Additional support from Adam Friedrich.
Digital direction by David Hyland. Photography by Angela Major. Artwork by John Nichols.
You can see more at wpr.org/mappedout.
And that was episode 7 of WPR Reports, Mapped Out, a documentary series about redistricting in Wisconsin. Of course, we will continue to cover redistricting in our conversations on the Ideas Network and in WPR newscasts, bringing you the latest as it unfolds. And you can learn more about the series, hear all the episodes at wpr.org/mappedout. Ahead this hour, we hear a story from Wisconsin Life about the origins of the Culver's franchise, you know, those famous butter burgers made to order. And then we move to one of the nation's leading authorities on the legal history of abortion in America. We talk with Professor Mary Ziegler from Florida State University. Mary Ziegler told NPR last week that she thought she knew how the justices would navigate their arguments, but they did something else.
So, Democrats call the GOP redistricting plan gerrylandering. Republicans have another way to describe
it. I thought the court was going to overrule Roe, but to do so over a course of a couple of steps and a couple of years. And I thought that doing that might be a way for the conservative justices to reach the outcome that they think is correct and that their political allies would celebrate, while managing potential political fallout.
How do you feel about the U.S. Supreme Court's deliberations on abortion? Do you anticipate how the justices would interact on this politically charged issue? What questions do you have about the justices' views or past rulings? 800-642-1234. You can join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. News is coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.